Let's go in depth on all things Hawkeyes. This is Hawk Central. On Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into the latest Hawk Central Radio Hour. I am your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. And like the Hawkeye women's basketball team, we'll be headed to Albany for the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. I'll be joined by Tyler Tashman later on in tonight's 6 to 7 o'clock show here on KXNO to discuss the end of the Iowa men's basketball season, some possible roster alterations, and Kirk Ferentz's Tuesday press conference that kicked off spring football. But first, the Iowa women have survived and advanced from a tense 1-8 matchup on Monday night. Caitlin Clark scores half of Iowa's points in a 64-54 victory against West Virginia that was tied up at 52 with just over 2 minutes to go. I was fortunate enough to be sitting courtside with my Hawk Central teammate, Dargan Southard, who joins me now. First off, Dargan, how would you describe kind of the intensity and maybe the tenseness and emotions in the environment we saw last night?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, even after a season with sellouts in every home game and 95% of the road games, you feel like, okay, that's the ceiling of an arena. Like, it can't get any louder or more raucous than that. And that was proven wrong, because that was louder than Michigan, which was probably the loudest game this season at home. And I mean, it took Iowa a while to kind of harness that energy and be able to use it productively, because, you know, West Virginia, their game plan pretty much unfolded exactly as they wanted it to. I mean, this game was played entirely at the Mountaineers' pace for the whole way. You know, Iowa was terrible offensively and had put a lot of pressure on them showing up defensively. So, you know, again, like, just because the one seed's by their name, we saw last year, we've seen the year before, we're seeing now, like, these games are just difficult and they're different and they're hard. But Iowa has yet another notch on its belt to maybe have an impact down the road. So we'll see. You know, I think Iowa did what it needed to do, and at the end of the day, they don't have to be masterpieces in March. They just have to get you a win, and that's what Iowa found a way to snag.
Yeah, absolutely. You wrote about this a little bit, but I mean, the enormous pressure that they faced in every single environment this year, it just wasn't quite the same. Like, this felt just like the Georgia game last year, and I wasn't at the Creighton game 2 years ago because I was at the NCAA men's tournament flying back from Richmond, if I recall correctly, from the Richmond loss. But did this feel different to you, like the pressure, the environment, or was Iowa equipped to handle it, because they did finish the game on what amounted to a 12-2 run?
I mean, I think it was different just because, I mean, you can't replicate entirely your season being on the line during the regular season. But I do think that Iowa got as good of a practice run with dealing with Monday throughout the season. So, you know, you think about Jan Jensen actually mentioned this last night, and I thought the same, that she said, we don't win that game if we don't have the Nebraska comeback and have that, you know, belief that was so recent. And again, Iowa was in a more detrimental spot in that game than this one, but still the same energy coming down the stretch in a tight game in a big spot. You know, there's similarities there. And again, I mean, I think it's important that, you know, it would be one thing if Iowa had to win a close game that was in the 90s and it was just trading baskets, Caitlin going off from everywhere, everybody hitting from deep, and it was, you know, can they get enough stops? But for it to be the complete opposite of that kind of style, and to have Iowa show up defensively and allow it to offset the offensive product that never really found a rhythm. You know, I think we were all kind of waiting for them to break through at some point. Somebody else besides Caitlin hitting from deep, that never happened. And so it was really on Iowa's ability to lock in defensively and make the plays that they needed to when they had openings. Sydney Folters and one probably sits at the top of that list. So again, I think it was a test that some probably didn't expect to come like this again, the way that it has in this exact spot the last 2 years. But it's easy to see a way for this to be beneficial as the Hawkeyes move through the tournament and the, you know, the pressure only intensifies.
Yeah, I decided to write about Sydney Folter after the game last night, and not exclusively, but that was the thrust of my column, that exact play, because it was really fascinating to break down and talk to so many people about it, because it's 52-52. Caitlin drives to the bucket. It's under 3 minutes at that point. Misses off the glass. West Virginia gets the rebound, so they've got the ball in a tie score with the clock winding under 2.5 minutes. And Gabby Marshall comes off a switch, just like she did in the Big Ten championship game, races over to almost the exact same spot, honestly, and gets a hand on J.J. Quinterly's three-point shot. That's their best player. They get the shot in the hands that they wanted in, and she gets a hand on it. It flutters into the air. It wasn't as emphatic a block as the Nebraska game. But she gets her hand on it, and there's Sid Folter, and she, she's in there for Molly Davis. Not that she wouldn't have been in the game in that spot, but she's, has to become a ball handler in this game because Molly's not there, and she spins up court. Caitlin's waving for the ball. It's really funny to, if you guys watch that replay. She's like at half court, like waving her two hands, like, "Hey, I'm open," like in football or something.
Well, and that was right in our direct line of view, so we saw it perfectly. Yeah, she was very stunned that she did not get the ball there.
Exactly. And but a Folter, Iowa had not had a field goal all quarter, would not get another one. This was the only bucket they got. A Folter drives to the hoop, just the speed that she goes with it, with her left hand. There was no – the girl guarding Hannah did not help, so she had a clear run to the basket. And Sydney told me afterwards, she was like, when they're guarding you that close, that's the best time to drive because they're not actually in front of you. They're kind of on your side, right, on your hip, and you can outrun them to the hoop. That's exactly what she did. Gets the foul, gets the contact. That's the biggest bucket of the season, Dargan, and that put Iowa ahead 55-52 after she makes the free throw. Sydney Folter Caitlin scores half the points, but she had the biggest bucket and the difference maker there.
Well, and I think the whole scene of that play is exactly what, is going to separate Iowa from a short stay or short stay by their standards or a long stay, because everybody's expecting Caitlin to get the ball in that spot. Caitlin said she was expecting to get the ball in that spot. If you're going to take it the way that Sydney did, you better make it, especially because, as Caitlin said, she was open in transition and would have had a pretty decent look. But again, it goes back to, every little thing on this journey this season, is getting cashed in right now, because, I mean, there's no way to know this for sure, but if Sydney Folter doesn't have the Big Ten tournament that she does she have the confidence to make that play and put it on her shoulders and say, hey, somebody else can deliver in winning time when we desperately need a bucket. And so, everything that Iowa's kind of been marching to this year, pressure is a privilege, the veteran maturity of this team, the experiences, we've been through everything, all of it kind of got put on the line there. As you said, 2 minutes to go on defense is not a very calm spot to be in. And to Iowa's credit, they pretty much handled the last 2 minutes and got out of there just in time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she and hopefully you guys can read that story at hawkcentral.com. I mean, she's put in the work. She's been waiting for this. It was the night for the seniors, but the junior is the one that really takes them to the finish line. sends them to Albany. One of the big narratives last night, Dargan, that I'm seeing, on Tuesday morning, is the foul disparity. And I guess sitting courtside, I feel like we get a different appreciation. We kind of talked about this. Like, one of the things you notice when you sit courtside is just how intense the defense really is, both in the men's and women's game. But in this game in particular, I mean, it was West Virginia, give them a lot of credit. They brought their game plan to the table. They executed it to the table. If they didn't, if they had just hit more shots, I mean, they did not shoot the ball well from distance, and Iowa kind of dared them to do that. They finished 9 for 34 from long range. That's 26.5%. I know it felt like they hit more, but Iowa does hold them to 54 points. But anyway, they were literally in Caitlin's space the entire game. They could have called twice as many fouls as they did. I have absolutely zero problem with the foul disparity because it was two totally different approaches on defense. Iowa sagged and dared them to shoot three, so you're not going to foul. And West Virginia, you know, almost played like, you know, for Iowa men's fans out there that remember the 2013 Big Ten tournament, they played that kind of physical defense and daring the officials to call it every time because you know they're not going to call it every single trip down the court. And I felt like the free throws were a non-story to me. That was how West Virginia was going to play.
Well, and for starters, I think the discrepancy was 30-5. You can chop 10 of those off because they all happened in the last 90 seconds when West Virginia was fouling to try to extend the game. So really it's 20-5. And yeah, you know, we all like when the postseason starts because we get to sit courtside, but it does help us do our jobs better and getting to see how the game flows, you know, that closely. And at no point did it feel like Iowa was getting, you know, a super, you know, biased or slanted whistle. Several things can be true at once. The officiating as a whole in women's basketball needs work, and, you know, it didn't necessarily make a difference in this game. So, I think West Virginia was, you know, I don't know what their foul totals are for the season, but it seems like that's just kind of, you know, what they live with. It's almost like how, you know, Caitlin's turnovers are what they are and they come with the territory. And so I thought Iowa did as good a job as it could, fighting through a lot of frustration offensively, Caitlin in particular, because I did find it interesting. So the last two times that Iowa failed to reach 70 points on its home floor was the Kansas State loss earlier this year, which was easily the worst performance that Iowa's had in a while, and the Creighton loss. And so those were both instances where the offense wasn't there. They needed the defense to be A+, and you know, both of those were pretty painful losses, and to have the game flow pretty much go the same way and be able to pull this out and do it the way that they did seems significant, you know, as we look ahead and see what's down the road.
I'm glad you brought up the Creighton game from 2022 briefly there, because the final score in that game was 64-62 Creighton. And, you know, one of the differences in this game, I mean, I would say the offense was similar to that game, but one of the differences, Iowa's defense was better on Monday night. And I felt like they've played a lot better defense this year. I mean, that's something we appreciate, I think, up close. Just how good Gabby Marshall is on defense. And I thought Caitlin played a really good defensive game as well. She was all over the place. And, give credit to Iowa's starting five. They shouldered the load of minutes on Monday night. 36-48 for Hannah Stolke after barely playing in the first round. Sydney Folter plays 35. Kate Martin, 35. Caitlin plays all but 10 seconds. Gabby Marshall, 36. So, a strange box score, Dargan. Only 17 field goals for Iowa, 7 assists, 15 turnovers, just crazy. But West Virginia is number one in the country in turnover margins, so that was not unexpected. Before we move on to the Sweet 16, let's just talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark and her emotions and her you know, how she channeled them in this Monday night game. I felt like her antics were a little bit over the top in the first round game against Holy Cross, but I felt like, I know everyone's, you know, grasps on the, you know, little clips on the internet or whatever, but I felt like she channeled her energy in a positive way for the most part. She still had her usual conversations with the refs, but I felt like she was better, and I felt like that helped Iowa to the finish line, honestly.
Well, and I think just the game flow helped with that, because obviously, you know, when all of her Holy Cross antics were happening, the game was already out of reach. I mean, Iowa was up 20 points at that point. So for her to be in that intensive of an environment and match the moment with her own intensity, I think is what, you know, has gotten us here, and why Caitlin Clark is, you know, where she is. You know, I think, I guess if I could have one thing, you know, I do think Caitlin could be a little more efficient in her referee conversations. Because,
yeah, no question.
You know, I think, you know, it may not just be, you know, you're trying to complain about the call that just happened, but, you know, you put a bug in the ref's ear about something, and maybe you get a call later in the game that is similar. So, you know, I think it's probably turns refs off a little bit when Caitlin is coming at them after, you know, 90% of the whistles, even though she's probably right 90% of the time also. You know, that's certainly adds to the legitimacy of what she does, is that the way she sees the game, you know, a lot of the fouls that she's complaining about probably are fouls, but the reality is you're not going to get every whistle. You're not going to get, you know, some nights you're not even going to get a good whistle, and you got to push through it, and you got to make it happen one way or another. And so I think down the stretch, and then obviously once the game was in hand, Caitlin really kind of had fun with the environment that she was, you know, largely responsible for creating over these years. And so it was good to see, you know, everybody, the three starting seniors in particular, you know, they got to the nostalgic part of the night, but it certainly was a fight and a clawing battle all the way through to get there.
You're listening to Hawk Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. This is Chad Lystico talking Iowa women's basketball with Dargan Southard. We've got a couple minutes left, Dargan, so let's look ahead to Saturday's Sweet 16 rematch. Fifth-seeded Colorado will be the opponent, 2:30 p.m. Saturday from MVP Arena in Albany. That will follow the other Sweet 16 matchup, so the winner of that game will face the winner of UCLA versus LSU, which is at noon Central Time, also on ABC. Interesting, isn't it, Dargan, that they're going to face Colorado again in the Sweet 16? We were watching a little bit of that Colorado K-State game. A lot of the players in that game are very similar. It's a rematch of familiarity. And my general feeling, Iowa's a 9.5-point favorite here already, but my general feeling is, just like last year, I feel like this game really is going to prepare them for what's ahead in the Sweet 16. I still like Iowa's chances to advance, even though I think it'll be a tough game.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at last year's game against Colorado, Iowa trailed at the half. They trailed early into the third quarter before finally hitting the gas. And that, you know, they put up 80 points that night, but that wasn't necessarily the smoothest offensive, you know, flow all the way across the board. So, yeah, it is a little strange that, you know, regardless of who won that Colorado-Kansas State game, Iowa was going to have a familiar matchup because, as you said, a lot of the key players, almost all the key players from last year's Colorado team are back. And that's a team that's kind of had a bit of a roller coaster season. You know, I remember they were up, you know, in the top five for a while this year.
Beat LSU.
Yeah.
To open the season.
And, yeah. I think they might have even been number one in the committee's first top 16 reveal. I know they were a one seed in the committee's first reveal, but then really struggled down the stretch. And obviously that's how they ended up with a five seed. I'm interested to see, you know, how the fan breakdown turns out. You know, obviously Iowa fans have set a pretty strong precedent this season, and you would expect that they would probably have more fans than anyone at the arena. But, you know, Albany is kind of in a random spot and, you know, is not super, you know, there's not a ton of flights there out of Iowa. And so I think what you'll see is probably a lot of people with Iowa connections who live in the Northeast are the ones that make that trip. So, you know, obviously that's going to be a key weapon that Iowa has used all year to its advantage. Definitely used it last night, and we'll try to do the same as we move forward here.
Yeah, a few other storylines to watch. This will be we only got about a minute or two left here, Darren. But, you know, Molly Davis, will she return at all this season? They've at least given her a chance. She was on the bench in street clothes on Monday night. It just doesn't seem optimistic there to me, but I hope for her sake. I mean, it'd be cool to see her even just get a few minutes. I know she's working hard behind the scenes. Got a chance to talk to her a little bit earlier in the week before the Holy Cross game, and, you know, good spirits and everything like that. Stolke, it seems like she's got a little bit of a knee injury, but she played a ton of minutes, so I guess she's doing okay. Great to see her hit a couple clutch free throws too there. Any last storylines with this Hawkeye team that you're watching? It's so funny, isn't it, that they could face Colorado in the Sweet 16, and if they win that game, they could maybe Caitlin, you know, has to beat Haley Van Lith again in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I'd end with, you look at how those two teams got to Albany, and UCLA was in a battle last night in the 60s with Creighton. LSU, you know, struggled with MTSU for a little bit before pulling away, and they, you know, only won their first round game by 10 points the same way that Iowa did. So I think everybody's kind of realizing that, you know, if you're not named South Carolina, the battles in this tournament are going to be tough, and they're going to be grueling, and it's really going to be on who can deliver and execute when it matters. So looking forward to Albany, and should be a good time no matter how long we are there. But I will say, we do have our hotels booked through Tuesday, so consider that some confidence points, if you will.
And, yeah, we may both be packing for Cleveland as well, just in case, since it's only a short, you know, what, 7-hour drive or a short flight from Albany to Cleveland. But we'll see. That's a long ways off. Thanks, Dargan. Good stuff tonight.
Appreciate it.
All right, coming up next, Tyler Tashman and I will talk spring football and the end of the Iowa men's basketball season and what the future holds for the Hawkeyes roster. You're listening to Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. I'm your host, Chad Lystico, Hawkeyes columnist for the Des Moines Register. Fun conversation about the Iowa women's basketball team with Dargan Southard. Now it's time to look at the men's team with my buddy, Tyler Tashman. Tyler, great job on the Hawkeye men's beat this year. Seriously, you did amazing. Allowed me to do a lot of stuff with the women, which was very beneficial, I think, for everybody. We'll get to the Hawkeye's season-ending loss to Utah as we go in this conversation. But first things first, newsy thing happened Tuesday afternoon. Tony Perkins enters the transfer portal. I don't know. I thought I would have said maybe a 25% chance he comes back. I don't think this was surprising to me, but what were your thoughts when you saw Perkins in the portal?
The first thing kind of spinning to the future is that, well, this is Brock Harding time now. And, you know, he has obviously shown flashes of what he can do in his freshman season. There were some times where he really gave Iowa a big boost. And I'm thinking to the Illinois game at Carver Hawkeye late in the season that Iowa lost, but you know, Brock looked really good. So, I mean, at this moment, Perkins is in the portal, Desante Bowen is in the portal. You know, Iowa has the opportunity to get more, a guard or two from the portal if they want to, but right now all the indications are this is the keys of the car are being given to Brock Harding. So that, you know, that right now is your future point guard. So that to me was kind of the biggest, you know, turning the page to a potential new chapter of who's going to be running the show.
Yeah. I don't have a feel for where Perkins is going to end up, but he's certainly the type of guy with the type of, you know, he's second team All Big Ten. You know, he's going to probably get some pretty good NIL offers, I would guess, Tyler. I don't know where he ends up. We'll see how quickly that goes. But usually when guys enter, they have a pretty fair idea where they're going. So, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. Who knows? There could be more Hawkeye basketball news by the time you're listening to this. But as far as the rest of the roster goes, Tyler, I mean, a lot of this could be a pretty significant offseason in terms of roster movement. What else do you got your eyes on as we move along here in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, so right now, as we speak, Iowa has two scholarships available because you look at Ben Cricky's out of eligibility, Desante Bowen in the portal, Tony Perkins in the portal, and then Patrick McCaffrey moving on from the program. And then there's two freshmen coming in, Chris Tajo and Cooper Koch. So Iowa is going to have some room to make some off-season moves, and obviously there could be more movement. So, you know, even more room could possibly open up. But the one thing I kind of look at right now is just the backcourt depth, because you lose Perkins, you lose Bowen. Right now, you know, things kind of look at Brock Harding, Peyton Sanford, Price Sanford, Josh Dix, but in Cooper Koch, but you probably would like to add in that room. And then, you know, if you want to get another big, I think those are probably the two biggest needs right now. And one of the biggest things I think going into the offseason is just needing that defensive versatility, because I think that's really where Iowa got. And obviously, this is not new for me to say that Iowa needs defensive help, but the fact that Ben Cricky just really got exposed defensively on switches when he had to try to guard smaller guys, I just feel like Iowa really needs guys that are more versatile defensively, that you can switch with, that you know, just can at least try to cover the gaps a little bit more, because it just felt like that really set Iowa back defensively. So those are some of the things I feel like Iowa kind of really needs to prioritize as they move forward in the offseason.
Well, and you brought up Peyton Sanford there. I mean, I don't think there's any guarantee that he comes back either. I mean, that's going to be probably the biggest deal of all these things. Mm-hmm. We kind of felt like Patrick was going to move on one way or another. He has the COVID year available, so he could play elsewhere. Tony Perkins obviously is going to play elsewhere, but Peyton Sanford has you know, the option to go pro or come back. Obviously, his brother's here. Any feel, you know, based on covering the team all year, of what might happen with Peyton Sanford? Because if he doesn't come back, then the cupboard's getting pretty bare pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it would seem to be in his benefit to at least test the waters, because the way the system's set up now is you can go get feedback, make an informed decision, you know, come back with, hey, this is what I was told by the NBA evaluators of how to take that next step in my game. So I don't think it would hurt him in doing that. But at the same time, like, he is probably the single most important decision this offseason for Iowa, because just the way he played in the latter stages of the season. I mean, he became the player that I think a lot of people expected he was going to be this season, in terms of breaking out, kind of being that alpha scorer. And so he will automatically really be, I think, Iowa's most important player next season if he comes back. And you know, I think you could put Owen Freeman in that case. You could maybe put Josh Dix or Brock Harding in that case. But just his explosive scoring ability, I think, puts him at or near the top of the list. And then on top of that, just his leadership. I mean, he just really felt like a guy that emerged as a leader this season, almost just kind of the emotional heartbeat of the team, the way that he was able to keep guys together. So that's another important aspect in it as well. But no, I mean, I think he's probably, you know, at the top of the list when it comes to what you're trying to hope that comes back if you're an Iowa fan.
Yeah. And at this point, I mean, I think we're probably, you know, the percentages keep going up as every day passes that Fran McCaffrey will return as the head coach. I mean, it's not like he's on a hot seat. He's not going to get fired, but there, you know, there's at least murmurs that, you know, maybe he, you know, just felt like, you know, time for him to get a fresh start with his son Jack going into his senior year of high school, Patrick moving on, Connor, you know, obviously in a different phase of his life now. Family very important to them. But it feels like some of the, you know, I don't see him taking a step down in jobs if he did need a fresh start. And I'm not saying he's even thinking about it, but there was a thought out there that maybe, you know, there could be him moving somewhere and then the Hawks getting Darian DeVries and there's, you know, all this stuff from Drake. But of course, DeVries now is the head coach at West Virginia. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think about, you think the odds are pretty high right now that Fran does return? I think they are just by default really, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I do think so. And a lot of the kind of, I guess, chatter around it, I don't know how valid it was, and I can't speak exactly for what Fran McCaffrey's thinking, because there's always, especially in kind of the modern landscape of things, you know, never say never, but it just felt like a lot of that, you know, was just kind of, they didn't have a lot of base to it. And like, you look at one of the rumors, I guess, and I'm not even going to name it, but Connor McCaffrey quote tweeted on Twitter, basically taking away the credibility of it. So, no, but I do think that as the things move quickly nowadays in college basketball, and the longer that Fran McCaffrey stays, the longer it goes that he doesn't make a movement, is the less likely for things to happen. But, you know, the carousel is still spinning, I guess you could say. And I don't mean to like throw that out as any speculation, but just things are still moving in college basketball when you look at the Louisville job still being open, and, you know, what potential things, domino effects that could have. So, like I said, I mean, you know, I think you put it in a good way of that. The longer it goes, you know, the more likely that Fran is to stay. And we've really never gotten a concrete indication that he wants to leave in the first place. So, you know, it seems like it's fair to say at this point that he'll be Iowa's coach next season.
And we're on to next season because this season ended. 19-15 record. The Hawkeyes fall to Utah. In the NIT, I guess, round of 16, right? 91-82 the other night, Sunday night. It was kind of a strange game, wasn't it, Tyler? I mean, five guys in double figures, but none of them are Tony Perkins or Peyton Sanford. Sanford goes 1 of 11 from the floor. Perkins goes 1 of 5 from the floor. You're not going to win when your two best players go 2 for 16. Patrick McCaffrey, strong game in his finale, 7 for 9 from the floor, 19 points. Brock Harding, 12 points, 4 assists in 16 minutes. You know, Ben Krikey with 12, but he didn't do much late. Owen Freeman with 12. Josh Dix with 14, 6 of 9 from the floor. Josh Dix, we haven't mentioned much, but he's a key building block next year. I don't know. Just in general, Tyler, you know, where did this game get away from him, and how do you look at this season as a whole?
Defense, because, I mean, Utah went off from three. And I'm not speaking for Iowa as a team, because I think that they would probably feel differently, but it just kind of felt like we needed to turn the page to the next season. Like, it, Fran McCaffrey obviously made it known that the NIT was something they weren't going to take lightly. But it just felt like, you know, the way that Iowa was set up, to where you have four freshmen in the regular rotation, you have a sophomore getting major minutes, that, like, you know, there is some optimism for the future, and it felt like taking a step towards getting closer to there is, it just kind of felt like maybe what, at least from the outside looking in, would be good for Iowa. So, as a whole, the season, there's a lot of missed opportunities when you look at the chances that Iowa had to potentially make the NCAA tournament. They, with a win over Illinois in the regular season finale, if they would have beaten Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament, there were a handful of other games that they kind of let slip away down the stretch that could have changed what their resume looked like. But, you know, there's value in this season if it builds a foundation to go on to bigger and better things, because you have those young players that have given reason, that have shown flashes of what they can do, that have given reason for optimism. If they can build off that, and hey, this is going to be the, not making the NCAA tournament this season is going to be the casualty for making it for three seasons more in a row, then I think you there's a lot of value in the kind of learning process of this season. Now, we won't know if that's the case kind of until things play out, but I think it's far too early to say, well, this was just a totally lost season. I think we're going to kind of have to see how this fits into the context of the next 2 to 3 years to really decide of how meaningful this season was.
My final thoughts on this would be, this season reminded me of the 2017 season a lot, because the teams got to the brink of the NCAA tournament, kind of flopped in that 7-10 game at the Big Ten tournament, went to the NIT, won a game at home, and then lost a game. So Iowa lost to TCU in 17, finished 19-15. They finished 19-15 this year as well, and they had young pieces on that team, Jordan Bohanna and Tyler Cook. And then they came back the next year, and that's pretty much been the worst year of Fran McCaffrey's tenure outside of the very first year when it was a total rebuild, and they went 14-19 that year. Then it got better. So we'll see, you know, what happens. I do like the, like you said, if the four freshmen come back, Dix comes back, if Peyton Sanford comes back, plus the two freshmen you got coming in, plus you got to add somebody, you know, a guy or two in the portal. I think you at least like the initial stages of this roster development. But, yeah, a long way to go. And, you know, this offseason's got, you know, this offseason's probably just getting started across the board in college basketball. All right, coming up next, there's fresh football content to discuss. Kirk Ferentz met with the media for the first time since Tim Lester's hiring 2 months ago. What we learned from Kirk Ferentz coming up next on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register here, joined again by Tyler Tashman. We've talked women's basketball. We've talked men's basketball. Now we're going to hit Iowa football. Caden Proctor. Kirk Ferentz met the media on Tuesday. Caden Proctor did not and will not.
That would have been interesting.
So that was Tuesday. I wrote a column about the three most interesting things we heard from Kirk Ferentz that published this morning. But Tyler, first wanted to know, what was the number one thing you took away from the head coach on Tuesday?
Well, I think, you know, we were kind of talking before the press conference, and you made a good point that it had been sort of, since the Lester hire, like a fairly quiet offseason for Iowa football, which probably was a good thing, but with the exception of one thing, and that was the Caden Proctor news obviously he transferred to Iowa and then decided that he would be moving on from the program. Lots of scrutiny and discussion around it. But Kirk Ferentz talked a fair amount, I would say, about it, and just kind of the overall state of college athletics, and basically saying that just there's no structure, no framework, were the words that he used in terms of the modern landscape of things. So it's something that coaches, it's as frustrating as it might be for players, it's even more difficult for coaches to deal with, because they're the ones that are having to build the rosters, to get a coach's perspective on how difficult it is to maneuver these things when it's the Wild West out there. And there's good for NIL and the transfer portal, but at the same time, when Kirk Ferentz says there, you know, or when you say the lack of structure, I mean, there really is no structure at all. Like there's just no bylaws and things kind of keeping this in check. So that's kind of the dark side of the way that college athletics has turned, and that there's just really not much control over things at all.
Yeah, that's it'll be interesting to see how Iowa navigates the portal coming up. It opens up April 15th. So it's funny. I think you've mentioned this, and I ended up putting it in my column because I searched the transcript. Yeah, Kirk Ferentz did not mention Caden Proctor by name at all. In fact, one of my questions, he said, that player you mentioned or something like that. So it's almost like we're in a, you know, Ohio State, Michigan team up north type of situation here. He who shall not be named. So that was kind of interesting. And yeah, this was not one of the quotes that I highlighted in my column, but he did say of that player He said, if there's a silver lining here, we didn't spend any practice reps with someone who had no intention of being here. So I thought that was a pretty strong, I mean, he didn't say it in a strong way, but he just sort of said it matter-of-factly, like, yeah, he didn't, you know, in Kirk Ferentz's opinion, he never intended to be here long-term. So that was kind of a shot fired, I feel like. And there's definitely no mending fences at this point with Caden Proctor, right?
Yeah, no, and I mean, Kirk was, as you would expect, like, he didn't take a ton of shots at, at him, or, maybe you could say there were some subtle jabs, but, he handled things as he usually does, which is, with a lot of class, so I think he kind of did what he needed to do, and now the situation can kind of just be closed on and moved on from.
Yeah, and we will move on now too as well. And one of the three quotes that I highlighted, I don't know if we'll get to all three here. We're kind of running low on time, but let's talk quarterbacks because that will be a major topic this spring, major topic this summer, probably a major topic in the portal, as I mentioned, when it opens in April. But here was the quote I highlighted from Ferentz regarding Cade McNamara. He said, "I would like to think in June he will be full speed to do everything." I thought that was pretty positive, Tyler. I mean, Cade McNamara tears his ACL on September 30th in the Michigan State game. We know he waited a little while to have surgery. We've seen him throw a few balls in, some Hawkeye videos online, but Ferentz saying basically they're really not letting him do much other than stand still and throwing. I still took that. I know I didn't expect him to participate in spring ball, fully or anything like that. June would be about 8 months out, 3 months of the season plus five to hit June 1st. So I guess I take that as a positive. How did you take that from Kirk Ferentz?
No, I think that is a positive. The fact that there's at least hope that he can be doing things full speed by June. And you also look at the fact of they're installing a new offense, and to be able to have at least a little time to be going full speed in a new offense, being able to understand the reads and all the kind of intricacies of that. But I don't know, just the quarterback room in general is at the top of my list probably of biggest concerns heading into next season, because you really just hope that Cade McNamara is healthy and at least near the version of himself that he was at Michigan, because otherwise – you're just running into the same situation as you were last season. And it's like, you want to turn back to Deacon Hill, Marco Linez, are you going to go to him? Like maybe both of them, or, we didn't see much Linez, but maybe Deacon Hill made strides in the off season. But I just feel like the offense just, I'm looking a few steps ahead here, but I feel like last season really was an indication of you have to look a few steps ahead. If you're Iowa, especially in the quarterback room, just because of how bad it was. But if for some reason Cade McNamara isn't ready on opening day, or, he isn't able to stay healthy, is there a good enough backup plan? Like that, to me, that's a major concern right now, because then you run into just basically getting in possibly to the same circumstances that you did last season.
Exactly. That's exactly right, Tyler. And that's so the bummer of, Cade McNamara not being ready till June is that he can't do the spring the first spring practice install with Tim Lester. Of course, he's going to learn all the terminology. Kirk Ferentz said Cade's doing a good job with all that. But at the same time, you would love to get those 15 practices with, Cade running the number one team. And he is tops on the depth chart. A lot of people flipping out, Tyler, that Deacon Hill is number two at this point, and Marco Linez is listed number three, but I don't think that means anything. I think that's just how they ended the season, and Kirk Ferentz basically said as much. So if you're out there overreacting that I can't believe Deacon Hill is basically the starter with Cade out, I don't think that's really the case. And my point here being, Tyler, that I don't think Tim Lester is going to come in as a new offensive coordinator and decide, yep, Deacon Hill, that's the guy we're riding with if Cade gets hurt. I just don't see that really happening unless, he's lost 40 pounds and just made amazing strides.
Yeah. And the other thing too is let's say, and I know this is probably bringing up bad memories for Iowa fans, like thinking back to how bad it was last season with the quarterback play. And I don't mean to bring up that, you know, specifically, but if Iowa gets into the same situation or near it that it did last season in the quarterback room, like, I feel bad for Tim Lester, because he did not recruit any of these guys. He comes into an offense that already has so much scrutiny, you know, on it, basically broke. It's, you know, a broken offense trying to turn it around. And if the quarterback play isn't there, like, it's almost, I don't know how you repair it. You know, that's just like when you look at an offense and someone who doesn't even really watch football that much, like, knows how important the quarterback is. And Iowa didn't do anything, at least so far this offseason, to make that, to add something to that room. So they were basically, you know, putting stock in internal development and getting and staying healthy. So that's where they're put their chips right now. We'll see if that comes back to if that ends up backfiring or if it ends up working out.
Yeah, and speaking of Lester, there was a lot of conversation and questions about Lester, probably the most asked about topic, I would say, on Tuesday. And Ferentz did offer a few nuggets here, pearls of wisdom, basically saying they're taking Tim Lester's playbook and going with it. So I thought that was encouraging. You know, for those that asked, you know, will he give Tim Lester the keys of the offense? It seems like, yeah, for the most part, this is Tim Lester's thing, and Kirk Ferentz even said, yeah, I'm having a hard time keeping up with the terminology and everything. I think everybody is, but, you know, this is, you know, it's most important that the play caller, you know, feel really comfortable with the whole system. So I like the sounds of that. And he also said this, Tyler, he said, I think it's going to look different, with the offense. So, you know, I think we are going to see some changes, but very, very vague terms right now. I don't think we can really speculate too much on what those changes will be. I did ask if they're going to still have a fullback. Kirk Ferentz did say yes. I've heard maybe they won't. Well, I guess we'll see. I think we'll learn more once we get to talk to Tim Lester, once we see a few things with our own eyes. Maybe talk to some of these, you know, offensive players, right? You know, Kirk is not going to give us any material right now to run with as far as what changes are coming to the offense, right?
Yeah, and I have the transcript up right now, and I actually just highlighted the line, one of the lines you mentioned, which is, I think it's going to look different. And that was directly followed up with him saying, but I think philosophically we're in line. So, like, that basically, I think, looking, trying to overanalyze this one line, but, like, that is what people expected in terms of, hey, the nuts and bolts of the offense might be different, but they're still going to play complementary football. They're not going to turn into some aerial attack, total just 180 to what they have been doing. So I felt like that maybe kind of confirmed what we kind of expected at this point. But in terms of what it'll look like, I really don't think Iowa fans care what it'll look like as long as it scores points. Like, yeah, if Caleb Johnson is backpedaling into the end zone from 15 yards away or doing backflips, like, as long as he's getting into the end zone, I really don't think it'll make that much of a difference what it looks like. So that's kind of the bare bones of it. Like, as long as it works, that's all that really matters. But I do think the style of it and maybe kind of the scheme did get old with Brian Ferentz, and maybe that was what added to some frustration in terms of the lack of creativity and just maybe how much it became kind of predictable. And maybe with the Tim Lester offense, that might be a little change of pace with, hey, RPO stuff, it's going to be a lot more read and react, a lot less just kind of, you know, ho-hum and just really predictable. But like I said, I mean, as long as the guys are putting up points, I mean, that's kind of the biggest thing at this point.
Would love to see some points this season. That would be that'd be great. All right, thanks, Tyler. I'm off to Albany tomorrow morning. Might not be back until after the Final Four. So until next Wednesday, this is Chad Lystico, Tyler Tashman, and Dargan Southard saying thanks for joining us. Good night, and talk to you next week here on 106.3 KXNO.